Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Grapevine Open Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm Chris, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'll be your host for the month of July. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You can enjoy the Grapevine Open Meeting every Wednesday at noon Eastern Time on this virtual platform. The meeting will be recorded and will be posted as an audio podcast every Friday on all podcast platforms, on aagrapevine.org, and on YouTube. This is an open meeting. Everyone is welcome. We are glad you're all here, especially newcomers. If you are new to AA and want to learn more about our program of recovery from alcoholism, we encourage you to find an AA group in your area. Contact with group members will help you find a sponsor and help you learn about the AA program of recovery. This is today's Grapevine Daily Quote, July 1, 2026. By working with others, I am allowed to witness the miracle of sobriety and observe the twinkling eyes as others learn to speak the language of the heart. And that is from a contributor in Orange, California, from November 1996. You can sign up to receive the daily quote as a daily email at aagrapevine.org, or you will find it on the Grapevine app every morning. This is an excerpt from this month's Grapevine magazine. This is our annual prison issue, and this is called The New Me. It's from John S. in Newark, New Jersey. I can never forget the horrible crime I committed, but I do know that today I'm not the same person I was 20 years ago. Today I help others. I no longer hurt them. Today I give. I don't take. I no longer want to hurt myself. Today I can be trusted, and most of all, today I love myself. Like most alcoholics, I had very low self-esteem. I didn't like myself at all. But thanks to my higher power, I now love who and what I am. It took time for me to forgive myself. It has been a long process. I put a lot of work, and I live by the motto, "No change means no change," period. I had to change everything. With the help of God, I have created a whole new me, and I'm not done yet. I will never be perfect, but I'm sure better today than I was 20 years ago. In 2 years, I am scheduled to be released back into society. I am making plans to attend AA on a regular basis so I can keep my sobriety in focus. I can't put anything before that, not anything. I don't miss the old person I was. The new me is much better. And now, just let me read one reading from the book Alcoholics Anonymous, our big book. This is the beginning of chapter 3, more about alcoholism. Most of us have been unwilling to admit that we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove that we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step of recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently may be, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but since such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by a still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree that there's no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. Despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe they are in that class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will try to prove themselves exceptions to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. If anyone who is showing inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Heaven knows we have tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people. Here are some of the methods we've tried. Drinking beer only. Limiting the number of drinks. Never drinking alone. Never drinking in the morning. Drinking only at home. Never having it in the house. Never drinking during business hours. Drinking only at parties. Switching from scotch to brandy. Drinking only natural wines. Agreeing to resign if ever drunk on the job. Taking a trip. Not taking a trip. Swearing off forever, with and without a solemn oath. Taking more physical exercise. Reading inspirational books. Going to health farms and sanitariums. Accepting voluntary commitment to asylums. We could increase the list ad infinitum. This will be a two-speaker meeting. There will be no sharing by attendees, so please sit back and relax and listen. We often hear it is best to try to identify with the speakers rather than compare your story with theirs. So now I have the pleasure of introducing our first speaker. Paul and I have worked together for a few years now, and I find her to be an incredible person and a wonderful AA member. So let's hear Paula's story. Welcome, Paula.
Thank you, Chris. Hello, everyone. My name is Paula, and I am an alcoholic. First, I want to say I really love all the readings, Chris, you did, and I'm super nervous, but it just made me relax and just remember why I'm here and our primary purpose, and that's always a wonderful feeling, really. And my sobriety date is June 21, 2011. I just celebrated 15 years of sobriety. I was telling Chris that I'm a quinceañera. 15 years is a pretty big deal. And I was born and raised in Lima, Peru, in South America. Yes, that's America too. I have two brothers, and my dad was on the Navy. He was a Navy officer, and you know, we were raised in a kind of like military environment, and he was very strict as we grew up, and it was difficult. It was hard. He was an alcoholic, and I didn't know anything about alcoholism. My mom didn't drink, and I am the middle child, the only girl. And as I grew up, it was really hard for me to see myself as an alcoholic. And I started experiencing some things with going out with friends. And I would see that I needed to drink more and more, and I always needed to hide it and wanted to hide it because it was different for me from girls and guys and in the environment that I was in this my social life at that point. It was mostly the men who will drink, or maybe the girls will hide it good. And so I became that. I was hiding the amount of alcohol I was drinking. And as I say, I am from Peru and my mom didn't drink. So for me, it brought that shame and about being an alcoholic woman for me. So it was really intense for me in that way. I was an alcoholic woman and I didn't know how to handle that. So fast forward, my alcoholism escalated that when I got married. And because of my husband's, at that time, corporate job, we moved to the United States for work. And that's when it was really bad for me. I had one kid at that time and a baby. He was 6 months old. And I was really excited about moving out because for me, it was because of I wanted to change. You know, I was like running away from myself, but I couldn't. So I am there. I'm an alcoholic and I have one baby that I adore and is my life. And I can't be his mom because I am drinking and I don't know anything about alcoholism. So I asked for help. Like, really, what's going on with me? I can't do anything. I'm supposed to be doing all these things, and I can't do it. I can't take care of my baby. And so we traveled for work, and we went back to Lima where I did an outpatient treatment, and I was devastated to leave my son with family members, really. And I'm really grateful today that I understand that how hard it is, not hard, how dangerous it is for a mom who is a drunk to be taking care of small children. And as much as I complained at that time, I am so grateful today that my kids were not with me at that time. One, my kid, I only had one, and that I could take care of myself. So I got sober and I went back to the States, and I was looking for a Spanish speaking meeting because I learned already a little bit about AA, and you know, that's where you can get sober. That's one of the ways that you can get sober. So I tried AA and it was great. I went to English speaking meetings because I couldn't find Spanish speaking meetings, and I really connect with some friends, and I saw how AA is really amazing. I was living in Ohio, and that's why maybe also I couldn't find an English speaking group. But it was, you know, I had a lot of support from the English community. I was able to stay sober. I remember going to the meeting with my boy who was a baby, and I had a lot of help. They were helping me. It was so uncomfortable. They would take my boy from me, and you just stay at the meeting. And it was hard because I couldn't understand. It makes me emotional because I remember that I couldn't understand most of the things. I did some, but like the jokes, I think that maybe that's not important, but things like that. So I felt, even when I was feeling part of, because I was getting sober, I was working the steps, but there was a disconnection from me that I couldn't like really feel like that sense of belonging that I experienced today that we talk about all the time. But I kept coming back. And even when it was hard, you know, I was told when there's a will, there's a way, there's a way, there's a will. And I went. So I was able to stay sober for almost 4 years. And my life got pretty amazing. I had a second child and I had an amazing job that I really love. And I was happy. And my relationships got better with everybody around me. And I thought that you know that I it was pretty bad when I was in AA, when I found AA that time. But I started disconnecting little by little. Life got pretty good, and I was a mom, and I didn't think I was maybe as alcoholic as everybody else. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't like this. I don't like that. I don't need to go to this. Oh, so many meetings. I'm fine. I'm doing my things, and I felt fine. You know, but I learned in AA, even if you are really an alcoholic, that they come, that will drink. You will drink again. And that was my experience. Really, nothing was going on than me being an alcoholic and this progressive disease. And one day I decided, with two kids, small children, I decided that I was just going to drink because it was not working for me. And I did. I made a conscious decision to drink and to see what was going to happen, even when I can tell that I was really happy to be a mom of these two incredible kids. But that's what alcoholism did to me. So I chose to drink again, and there I was, thinking that it wasn't bad enough, and it was right away. I was lying to everybody. I was just unable to stay sober again, and it was really bad. It got really bad right away, and we know this disease is progressive. So I just can't stay sober. I start going to meetings again, and I stay 1 month sober, and then I drink again, and then 3 months sober, and I drink again. And I wasn't even like going to meetings and pick up a white chip. No, I was just sitting there trying to really to what do I do with this? And so then we have to move again, and we moved to Georgia, and I don't know what to do. Like, okay, let me find Spanish speaking meeting in Georgia in Atlanta. Maybe I will find some. Maybe that is my problem. I need to find a different group, girls. So I go to my first AA meeting, and I remember walking in so broken and desperate. And but I'm like, I have to try, even if I can stay sober for a month before dying, I'm just going to do it. So I went to the meeting, and I just sat right there in the meeting like I'm a regular, like, not because I wanted to lie, because I didn't want people to talk to me. So I sat in there, and I remember thinking, okay, you know, this is it. I'm just gonna come here every single day, and I'm gonna see what happens. And I remember also there was a big sign at this group that I go to that said, you never have to be alone again. And I hated that sign because I really wanted to be alone. Just leave me alone. I don't want to talk to anybody. I just want to be here. And also, you know, people, like, it's English speaking meetings, and I think that I don't have an accent, of course. And I go as by hi, people are asking me, where are you from? And I hated that. Like, everything that makes me, like, you know, we'll connect with people. I was really uncomfortable, but I didn't want to die. And I knew I was dying. It was already really bad. And I didn't leave. I kept thinking, you know, I don't want to leave my kids motherless. And then today, when I think about that, and I work with women that have that experience, that have lost children, or that are really struggling right now, or they think that their kids are gonna die without them because they are drunk moms like I was. You know, that is not a safe place for a kid. And I'm really grateful that really I was, because I remember how devastated I was when I had to go to a treatment center. And oh my gosh, my kid won't survive without me. Really? He was gonna die if he was under my care because of how much I was drinking. So I am grateful for that today. For today. I go to the meeting. I see the light, really. I'm like, okay, you know, I need to be here. I am getting sober. I don't want to admit that I'm feeling some joy, and maybe I'm connecting now again. But I met the most amazing people from the English-speaking community, which I call really AA community for me, because for me there's only one AA. But you know, the people that speak English, and I was there, and I was, like the book says, willing as the dying can be this time. And I stayed, and it was very, like I said, uncomfortable, but I was willing to be uncomfortable every single day. I sit at the meetings. I remember one of the first things that happened to me, this girl was sitting next to me at the meeting when I was getting already, I was, I think, 6 months sober. And she asked me, she's an English speaking girl, she asked me, do you want to be my sponsor? And I remember like freaking out at that time because I'm like, I'm 6 months sober. How am I going to be a sponsor for you? I can't. And I went right in to talk to my sponsor, and I'm like, Somebody's asking me to be their sponsor, but I think you should be their sponsor. And she said, well, let me tell you, girl, you can be a sponsor because you have worked the 12 steps, and that's what you need. And since then, I really, my biggest gift for me in AA has been sponsoring. I wasn't involved in service. I wasn't. I went to my group. I was involved in my group, and I sponsored. That was it's been my biggest blessing that I continue to help a woman in AA, especially now. So I'm sharing my experience with English speaking groups, and then because of service, because of my higher power that put me in this position after years of sobriety, that I was going to English speaking meetings. Because of work, I started attending Spanish speaking events, and I have to say I am so touched and so honored to have met these incredible trusted servants that really do so much for AA, and also to that have amazing recovery and a heart full of gratitude for their sobriety. And I get to work now with these amazing people, especially, well, everybody. I mean, especially the woman in AA, the Hispanic, the Latinas, girls like me. It is really hard. And I didn't know those things. I didn't know how hard it was also here in the United States for women, Hispanic, to really stay sober, to stay in a group, to connect and to serve in a group. I just didn't know that. So I'm really grateful to travel and to see all these amazing, incredible girls who are so passionate about service. And they help me so much, so much. And they teach me so much every time because, like I said, I wasn't involved in service. I don't care. I don't care here, but I didn't really care as much of all of that. I just wanted the recovery part, and I know it's the triangle. So, I've learned different things, but it's been amazing for me to come back like this way to the Hispanic groups. I remember one of my trips 2 years ago. I was in a hotel because we were attending this event, and one of my friends from the Hispanic community called me. It was a Thursday, and I was going to just be there and probably editing some stories. I'm doing some writing. And she said, let's go to a meeting. And I was like, yes, let's go to a meeting. So we went to a Spanish speaking meeting, and it just touched my heart so much to see. And I love English speaking meetings, but these meetings, it's just so fun, so funny. Everybody's just like, it's just so wonderful. And for me, that bond that I didn't have from before and I get to experience today is just so beautiful. So I wanted to share also, about my kids, my relationship with my kids now because of sobriety has been, or it is, incredible. We are close. They are teenagers. My two boys are teenagers, and they still want their mom in their lives. And that really touches me when I hear from other people, really, like of other stories and things like that, just from where I come from, for having a dad and a family that was really unhealthy. And coming, I remember when I was a little girl coming to my house, my dad was an alcoholic. I was so scared all the time. Me and my brother were scared of my dad all the time. We were always in a punishments or things like that. We couldn't do anything. It was hard. And for me, one of the most things that I cherish and I'm grateful for is that what my kids get to live today and get to experience, because I am a sober mother, and their dad also doesn't drink. Well, he drinks sometimes, but he's not an alcoholic. And one of the things I will always remember is how safe they feel in our house. And that's something that I didn't have. And I'm grateful that I get to do that today. I get to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to help people. I get to work on myself to be able to be the best person I can be. And, God, life gets lifey sometimes, but because I go to meetings and because I see a lot of stories, one of the things that I usually think about me not finding groups and thinking, oh my gosh, I am the only Hispanic Latina in the United States of America thinking that, I think about Lavinia. Now that I get to read all these stories from women like me that are sober and go to groups and participate in service. And also really touched me when I was saying, and I think I heard somebody talking about that here at this AA Life meeting, about the plain language big book. I was really touched by that because for me, I was sponsored with the book in English, and it was a hard book to read for me. And I went to college, and I read and I speak English, and but it was hard for me to read, and but I did it anyway, right? So I'm grateful we have this other tool to that can help other people like me to really understand the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know if my time is up, but I really speak less than my time, Chris. And thank you for this amazing meeting, and I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you so much, Paola. I could identify with a lot of what you said, especially first coming in. I had kind of a feeling like I didn't want people to talk to me either. I would sit in the back of the room and come late and leave early, kind of thing. But eventually, AA got me. And the one thing that I really could identify, and I'm kind of blown away by it. So I have adult children. My son is 28, and my daughter is 31, and they came up with the idea of the four of us, my wife and I, and the two of them going on vacation. So we did that a couple weeks ago, and I'm realizing now, like, that's not typical, And certainly when I was 28, I wouldn't have been caught dead going on vacation with my parents, So it's just amazing, I had children in sobriety, so I've been lucky that way. And I also realized, like, my daughter, she's 31. I got sober at 31. So that's just crazy. It's crazy. All right, so here's a few announcements before we get to Gerald. The seventh tradition of AA states that every AA group should be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA members can help by contributing to your group, your local office, your area and district, and to the General Service Board. There's a great pamphlet called Self-Support, Where Money and Spirituality Mix, and you can find that on AA.org. Grapevine does not accept direct contributions, but of course, we do have expenses. The best way to support Grapevine is to subscribe to the magazine, either in print, online, or on the apps. You can subscribe to the magazine in print or online by visiting aagrapevine.org. And you can subscribe to the app by searching for AA Grapevine on the App Store on your phone. You can also purchase Grapevine and Lavinia books, greeting cards, and other items at your local AA office. And by doing so, you'll be supporting both Grapevine and your local office. You can also visit the Grapevine online store at aagrapevine.org. The AA Grapevine Carry the Message Project allows you to help us help others by providing magazine subscriptions to those who are incarcerated, hospitalized, living in remote areas, or stuck at home. Visit aagrapevine.org and click on Carry the Message to learn more. We invite you to listen to our other weekly podcast, the AA Grapevine Half Hour Variety Hour, which is available for free on all podcast platforms and on aagrapevine.org. Check out Our Primary Purpose. That's the official podcast of the General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous. You can tune in to hear how AA's message continues to reach those who need it most. For all podcasts, be sure to subscribe on your favorite streaming platform so you can catch all the episodes. And please follow Grapevine on Instagram and YouTube. Okay. Gerald was having some audio problems. Let's see if he's okay now. No, no audio. Okay. So Gerald, I'm going to sorry. I'm going to share my story and but stay on and we'll get this fixed for next time, okay? So hi everybody, I'm Chris and I am an alcoholic. I grew up in a Irish Catholic neighborhood. And drinking was a huge part of the neighborhood. Both my parents liked to drink. My grandmother liked to drink. We all watched these sort of people who worked day in and day out, and they would get home from work and start drinking, and they would be happy-go-lucky and fun for a couple hours, and then they would turn nasty and mean after a couple more hours. So it was a real roller coaster growing up. It was a lot of bad stuff went on in our house. My parents used to fight to the point where the police would have to come to the house, and I remember being a little kid and seeing the police cuffing my father on the floor and taking him out of the house, and just it was very traumatic. Anyway, despite that, I grew up like kind of enchanted by drinking and wanted to do it and thought it was an adult thing and it was fun and all this. And when I was 10 years old, my sister, who's 12 years older than me, got married, and there was a big reception after the wedding, and I went around to her friends and my new brother-in-law's friends, and took sips from everybody's drinks around the table. They had tables of 10, and I would go around and take a sip from all the different drinks, and people thought it was cute. And I got wasted. I had to be taken home and put on the couch because I passed out drunk. And that was pretty much how I drank the rest of my life. I kind of took a break for it from a couple years after that incident. But as soon as I was 12 or 13, I was stealing beer from my father. We always had a big fridge full of beer in the basement, and I would steal it and steal enough for friends, but soon I was stealing, enough for us to go into the woods and drink, but always had extra for myself, and if there was two beers left and three of us, I was going to make sure I got two of them, or guy got them before the other guys got them, kind of thing. And the way I drank was that it was like obsessive, it was sort of I couldn't get it down fast enough. I couldn't get it down fast enough. I drank as fast as I could to get as drunk as I could, and it was really it was really sick when I think about it, how addicted to it I was from the very beginning, And I was mostly a binge drinker at first. As a teenager, I was a binge drinker, binge on weekends, and then the weekends grew to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and I was sort of then it, when I got to high school, I started drinking in the afternoons after school, and then a couple of years later, having fake proof drinking during school, going to a bar that was near the school, and gonna just go because had fourth period off and go for fourth period, but then never go back, somehow I dragged some other people along with me, but it was always different people, and some people were like, no, I'm not doing that again. I can't do that, but that's what I wanted to do. And I would buy enriched wines like Mad Dog 2020. Well, I shouldn't say the names. Enriched wines that were like, the stuff you drank to get drunk, and I would drink that was cheap, and it was potent. And I would drink that stuff. And I got so that I it took me 4 or 5 years to get through high school because I was less interested in going to school than I was with drinking, you know. And I would skip in the springtime, in the fall, I would skip classes and drink out on this hill that was away from the school, but it was still part of the property. And it was just a horrible way. And the thing was, like, the way I drank, like I said, I couldn't get enough and I couldn't get it fast enough. And I suffered from horrible hangovers. I mean, just like sick and headache and nauseous and weak and suffered through it, you know. And the only cure was to drink again. And that's what I did. And you know, I was a bona fide alcoholic at 16 years old, pass out, blackout drinker, you know. And the problem was that you know, in the beginning, I had a very high capacity and I could drink and party all night. And then my capacity started going down, down, down. And I was missing out on a lot of fun. You know, I'd go to parties and all of a sudden I'd be back in the woods behind the house that the party was at, passed out, you know. And I started trying to do a lot of the stuff it said in that more about alcoholism. I tried to control it, you know. I would go to a local bar and drink rum and cola, and then have you know, one rum and cola, and then we'll have one cola, rum and cola. And that didn't work because I would just guzzle down the cola and get to the rum and cola, you know. And can you imagine the hangover after that, after all that sugar and caffeine and, you know, just terrible. And you know, so I started finding other means of, like, trying to stay awake, and I started taking other things that helped me stay awake, and that became a problem as well. And anyway, all this sort of culminated. I was working at I had graduated high school finally after 5 years. And I started working at this marina, you know, on the Hudson River here where I live. And I went out one particular night and I went to see a local New York City artist down in New York City at a club, and did the extra substances to try to stay awake, and drank all night, and then had to go to work, and then you know, was dying from this terrible hangover, lying under a boat, scraping the paint off the boat to repaint it. And it was probably 90 degrees out, and I had goggles on and a mask, and couldn't breathe and couldn't see, and just totally hung over. And I started to think, like, this. I started to, at that moment, trying to think, you know, like, this. I can't go on like this. That was like the first time I ever thought that. I thought it was all fun and games until it started to have some real consequences, you know. And but I kept drinking. You know how it is. You know, it doesn't matter. But one week, I had Tuesdays off at this job, and on Monday night, we went to a local bar. We packed the car with food and beer and went to the bar, stayed at the bar until 4 a.m., and then drove down to Long Island to the beaches, and got to the beach at like 6 a.m. and drank and drank and passed out completely on the beach. And I had this, I don't know if you know what they are. Some of you might be too young, but they used to have these things called a boom box. And I had this big boom box. It was like the size of a suitcase, and it was a portable music. And I was playing the radio from New York, and it was silver. And I had it next to me, to my left. And I passed out drunk on the beach, and the sun kept coming up and up and up and up. And, you know, it was right over my head eventually. And the right side of my body got like first degree burns, but the reflection off the boom box caused second degree burns on the left side of my body. And when I got home, I was, you know, kind of like half and half, you know, beet red and sort of red. And I literally couldn't move for 3 days. Luckily, I was on my back, passed out, so I didn't get it on my back, but I got it on my front. But I couldn't, you know, no part of my body in the front could touch one another part without it hurting. So I laid in bed for 3 days, and I didn't even couldn't even like sort of sit up and put my head up. You know, back then we didn't have a TV in every room, and we didn't have like social media to play on. So I basically laid on my bed and thought about how screwed up my life was. And I had in those 3 days, a couple things happened. I detoxed because I didn't drink, and I had kind of a limited awakening. That like all this pain and trouble and misery I was going through was directly related to alcohol, and that I needed to stop drinking, or you know, I was just going to keep going with this. And that was June of 1978, and I stopped drinking on that day, and I didn't drink for 8 years. And a lot of great stuff happened, you know. I had barely gotten out of high school, so it wasn't like I could just apply to college, but I did go to community college where, as long as you had a high school diploma, you could attend. And I did really well there. And I sort of switched from alcoholism to workaholism, and I really studied really hard and I did really well. And I got accepted at a 4-year school a couple years later, and I went there. And I got out and I started working in the publishing industry. And I had like sort of a really nice career in magazine publishing. And I got accepted at another school for a graduate degree in magazine journalism. And I fell in love and I got married. And all good things were happening, except I was a dry drunk, and I was prone to anxiety, and I was prone to bad moods, and I was prone to depression, and I was prone to anger, and wasn't an easy person to live with. And despite not drinking, I had no program of recovery. I had no fellowship to rely on. I had no higher power to rely on. And when the inevitable happened, my first wife had an affair, and I caught them in our apartment. And it really broke my heart and set me off. And I went back to drinking. And I drank and drugged for 2 years in an attempt, I think, to kill myself, looking back now, because I was in so much pain. Luckily, I was still in grad school, and I got into therapy because of my pain, you know, pain of the breakup and all that. And my therapist told me that he wasn't qualified to diagnose alcoholism, but I certainly knew whether I was an alcoholic or not. And if I am, then he probably wouldn't be able to help me with that, but Alcoholics Anonymous would be a good place to try. And so I took that under consideration for a year or two, and stayed, you know, thought about it. But I used to see this advertisement in the student newspaper, and the advertisement said, Alcoholics Anonymous meets every Monday, 12:30, Student Union Room 413. And There was a particularly bad weekend that I went through, and I tried to sober up on Sunday. And when I went to bed on Sunday night, I started hallucinating and seeing like scary stuff, and in the walls and in the, I couldn't close my eyes because I would see the scary stuff, and I couldn't open my eyes because, anyway, it was I knew that that was a bottom, and I started thinking about what my therapist had said and this advertisement that I saw. And so that Monday, I got the courage up and I went to my first AA meeting at the student center in at NYU. And I remember like walking. I worked on Lower Fifth Avenue, so I had to walk a few blocks down, go across Washington Square Park to the student center. And the whole way, I was thinking about turning around and going back. You know, I don't really. This is anyway. I walked in, and I know it wasn't like this, but I kind of imagine it now, like when Dorothy opens the door from the house after it lands in Oz, and it's black and white inside and it's color on the outside. That's how I kind of picture it today. It was sort of like, I don't know what, I don't know if it was I guess it was a higher power that was bringing me there and was showing me this. Anyway, I went in and I sat down, and I immediately, I know this isn't true for everybody, but I immediately felt something special. And the guy who told his story, I don't think it was any coincidence that this was my first meeting, because this guy basically told my story about growing up in an alcoholic home, drinking at an early age, drinking the way I drank. And this guy, what seemed crazy, this guy had a year sober. I was like, a year sober? Oh my God, you know? And so I waited and waited, and they told the story, and it was wonderful, and it went around the room, and I waited as it went around the room, and it got to me, and I somehow I had the courage to say, my name is Chris, and I am an alcoholic. This is my first meeting, and I need help. And everybody clapped, yay! And I was like, whoa, what are they clapping about? And so after the meeting, this guy Chuck and a few other people came over to me. They had a big book, a Living Sober, and a meeting guide, and they gave me the three booklet books and told me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, that I should get at least a temporary sponsor to start out, that I should get phone numbers and call people, and that even if I didn't believe, I should say a brief prayer in the morning, asking that I be relieved from the desire to drink that day. And at night, when I go to bed, I should thank whatever higher power I have for another day sober. And I started doing those things. And not only did I stay sober, but I started getting an enthusiasm for AA and for life again, and really felt immediately some sort of spiritual connection, at least with the people, And soon after that, working on the steps with my new sponsor, Chuck, this guy, Chuck, who helped me incredibly when I first started. Working the steps, and I had one of these spiritual awakenings that people talk about, the white light experiences. I was coming home from work one night, and on the train going up the Hudson River during the sunset, and I got to that part of the big book where it asks the question, do I now believe, or am I willing to believe? And at that point, I didn't really believe, but then the question about, am I willing to believe? And I thought, I looked out the window and I saw the sunset, and I somehow or another, I just said to myself, yeah, I guess I'm willing to believe. And then all of a sudden, boom, this feeling of elation came over me, and the weight of all this crazy life that I was leading kind of felt like it came off my shoulders, and I felt incredibly light and happy and wonderful. And I since I've had that, I've have never, never, never again had a desire to drink. And I keep doing the same thing that they told me at my first meeting. I go to a lot of meetings, and I try to ask for relief from alcoholism every morning, and I try to say a prayer of thanks every night. And I've kind of slacked off on calling people. I need to do more of that. But I do talk to people, and I see folks like Gerald regularly, and we'll get Gerald on one of these weeks, get his audio fixed. And I'm really happy to be here. The funny thing is, I was studying magazine journalism at NYU when I went to my first meeting at NYU. And you probably know that I'm the publisher of the AA Grapevine. And they didn't care whether I had a master's degree or not, but they did need me to be sober to have this job. So AA qualified me for this job more than my education did. So, and I'm happy to be here and share with everyone. And thank you all for being here. That's it. I will say, please let your friends know about our meeting. This is an open meeting, so it is also ideal for friends who want to learn more about Alcoholics Anonymous. Keep this in mind when doing cooperation with the professional community or public information work. And I'm going to invite Paola to close the meeting in the way of her choice.
Thank you, Chris. And thank you, Gerald. I look forward to hearing you next time. Thank you, Chris, for your story. I'm so glad I was here to hear it. And I want to close it with a St. Francis prayer. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth. That where there is doubt, I may bring faith. That where there is despair, I may bring hope. That where there are shadows, I may bring light. That where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. That was beautiful. And thank you, everyone, for attending today. And we hope to see you again next week. Goodbye.